and stimulation for your brain. This is the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. The big story today is the story in Hartford, where a special legislative session started this morning. And joining us right now from Hartford is Jonathan Steinberg, who represents the 136th District, comprising Westport, Connecticut. He's also the chair of the Public Health Committee. He's had a finger on the pulse of everything in response to the COVID-19 epidemic. Jonathan, thank you so much for taking a minute to come onto the show today.
My pleasure, Lisa.
So tell us, paint a picture, if you will. What was it like to go into that building where there's no public today?
Well, they have police at every entrance with the temperature devices. There are spaces on the elevators, only two on an elevator at a time. They have little foot markings. Everybody's wearing a mask. It's hard to recognize some folks.
It is, isn't it? And if you're hard of hearing, it's impossible to understand what they say.
Well, the part, you know, of course we want to have the public involved, but the part I like is the, and I hope they'll take this in good humor, I don't have to deal with a lobbyist today.
Ah, yes, today you do not have to. Although I understand that there were supposedly going to be people protesting outside. Did you walk through or see any people protesting on the way in?
I got here very early, Lisa, so I understand there are going to be a lot of police officers here. I've not seen them.
All right, so tell us, Jonathan, what is on the agenda in what order today? And I know that you really know the specifics of the policies. What should we know about what you're being asked to approve?
Well, to be clear, this is a special session. Our regular session ended in May, even though we had not been in the building from middle of March. We're only dealing with four bills. There are arguments that we need to do more. There's some talk about another special session in September where we may deal with more COVID-related legislation. The only four bills we're talking about today are putting a cap on insulin prices, to expand the governor's executive order with regard to access to telehealth. As chair of public health, I think there are more things we need to do, but they're not in this bill today. It's all about reimbursement. And then the two more controversial bills, the expansion of mail-in voting, which we are doing via governor's executive order for the primary, but the legislature is going to do it for the general election in November. And then, of course, the most controversial bill, what we call the police accountability bill, which encompasses some 65 pages and 41 sections.
Wow.
One of the sections particularly controversial, having to do with governmental or qualified immunity, where we had 7 hours of caucus calls over the past two nights, and some compromises have been made. We expect that to be challenging for us. In some ways, it's actually split our caucus.
Are you in favor of it, Jonathan? Do you think that qualified immunity should go away for police officers? What do you think?
I was in favor of postponing the final decision on Section 41, as it's referred to, until the general session to give more time for the working group to do some analysis. Mm-hmm. The compromise was not necessarily to do that. They will look at the issue. But the only change was to remove direct liability for police officers. Municipalities are still liable, though they have insurance, and we don't expect that their liability would be greatly increased. That was a concession. It certainly doesn't please all of the police unions or individual policemen. It doesn't please everybody in our caucus on both extremes. I don't know whether it will attract any Republican votes. But I will vote in favor of the package. It is landmark legislation. I think it goes further than many states had contemplated. And it will begin to address, this is not an end in itself, it will begin to address bias and disparities in policing and will begin to focus on, for lack of a better word, bad cops, and okay, holding them accountable and getting them out of police forces.
So let me ask you, Jonathan Steinberg, is there more money being funneled into a greater proportion of education going to conflict de-escalation? Because one of the things that I've heard is that a lot of the police academy training is focused on handling one's weapon, and not enough is focused on mediation, de-escalation, and conflict resolution.
I'm not an expert on this, but there are a number of sections that refer to mental health assessments and training. One of the reasons why we postponed a few of the implementation dates are to afford police departments the opportunity to train all of their officers so that they're more up to date with less confrontational police tactics. Again, this is not an endpoint in itself. It is progress, and it does, I think, send a message to police departments across the state that there's an expectation that they will reform their culture and refine their practices to weed out bad officers and make sure that, you know, even in that split second, officers are thinking about whether they're violating an individual's civil rights.
Well, what about this idea of the internal affairs? I don't know if you were following the Shelton case, but yesterday the Shelton mayor fired three police officers for, not the Shelton mayor, pardon me, the Shelton police chief fired three police officers for dereliction of duty. And I don't want to get into all the nuts and bolts, but the bottom line was, Jonathan, that there was an allegation that two police officers did not properly handle a domestic violence incident because the person who was involved happened to be another police officer from Bridgeport who lived in Shelton. And the person who was in charge in internal affairs for investigating what everybody in the department thought was an incident that needed to be investigated because the woman was ultimately sexually assaulted and the police never did get in. The person who was going to be investigating were, they were union colleagues, police union colleagues, and they were all members of the same police force. So how do you have the fox guarding the hen house, not just for police, but any kind of wrongdoing in any organization? Is this bill going to disrupt that status quo?
Yeah, if you use a word like disrupt, I think the answer is yes. We've all heard stories about this. There was a story in West Hartford with Hartford Police, and we've heard stories across the country about clear violations in civil rights and let's just call it unfortunate bad decision making by individual officers, including higher up in the management structure of some police departments. Yeah, I think that in terms of disrupting, this is going to be at the very least a shot across everybody's bow, excuse the phrase, so that that every department will be focused on reform and thinking about their culture and whether they, by dint of training, intimidate citizens in a fashion that's inappropriate. I think different police departments are at different stages right now, but I would submit that every police department can do better.
All right. Well, I thank you, Jonathan Steinberg, for this. What do you think the likelihood is that we will get a police accountability bill passed, even if it isn't the current one that is, quote unquote, right now the compromise? Think we'll get something passed?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. As I said, there are those in the progressive wing of the House Democrats who are disappointed by any compromise. There are moderates like me who would like to have seen more of a compromise. And we don't know if we can attract any Republican votes. We expect amendments on the floor. And, you know, it's hard for me to handicap this race, but it's my expectation and my hope that we will pass this legislation, even if it's sometime tomorrow morning. That's what we're here for.
And just one other thing, and I really appreciate you joining us. This absentee ballot, it continues to be challenged by a few Republicans. And so far yesterday, they lost another challenge, but they're not finished with appeals. What is it going to look like with widespread absentee balloting for November? What will that mean?
It will mean drastic changes. We've already seen large increases in voter registration in anticipation of a landmark presidential election. I think that different registrars or voters and town clerks will be challenged in different ways. I'd argued for the ability to start counting absentee ballots the day before with built-in confidentiality so tallies don't get leaked, so as to avoid not knowing the outcome of elections across the state on Tuesday, November 3rd. That didn't make it in as far as I know. And it's going to mean that there will be some delays in reporting results. I do not believe, because there's really no evidence of widespread fraud, I believe chain of custody can be well managed. I think the Secretary of the State has thought this through very well. I strongly support this bill because we want to give everybody an opportunity to vote as safely and healthily as possible. So, yes, there will continue to be challenges. I think the recent court decision to throw out one of these legal suits is indicative of how difficult it will be for extreme Republican conservatives to prevail on this.
Are we going to be dropping our ballot in a ballot box in front of town hall? Because that's, I know that there are some people, nonpartisan, who are very worried about ballot tampering. Not quote-unquote ballot fraud, but literally ballot tampering.
You know, I won't speak on behalf of the town clerk and registrars here in Westport. I do know that they have a secure box outside, which you cannot tamper with. It's a one-way box. Obviously, that would not be large enough to deal with the volume what we're talking about. I'm highly confident they're anticipating what the needs are going to be to make sure that the chain of custody is secure. So I think that the claims that there will be widespread fraud or tampering are just plain bunk.
Okay. Well, Jonathan Steinberg from the 136th in Westport, thank you so much for taking time today. I know it's an incredibly busy day. Are you back? Are you like literally in your own little office with nobody around you, wearing a mask, watching the proceedings now before you're... Are you going to speak on the floor? Because I'm told if you speak on the floor, you have to literally go to the floor.
Well, I'm in my office. I'm not wearing a mask because I have my door closed and I'm the only one in here. Yes, I'm watching. We're using a Zoom technology to watch what's going on the floor. I don't anticipate speaking on the floor. I think it's cumbersome, and I want to really leave that opportunity for those who feel truly compelled to speak. None of the four bills are really my committee bills, telehealth being the closest one. So I won't rule it out, but my goal is to see that we deal with these four bills expeditiously, and it's not my intent at this moment to testify on the floor.
Jonathan Steinberg, thank you very much for taking time to come on, and we really appreciate
it. My pleasure as always, Lisa. Thank you for everything you do on your show to help educate people about what's going on in the state.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks. That's Jonathan Steinberg from the 136th. 203-333-9422 is our number. I'm trying to keep you updated on everything that's going on. Breaking story that I just received about BuzzFeed breaking the story about Instacart. Are you somebody that uses Instacart? Were you playing with the idea of using it? Have you become an Instacart adapter? In the early days of COVID-19, I went on Instacart myself in order to patronize, I think it was Stu Leonard's, and then I canceled my subscription. They wanted $9.99 a month, and I wasn't happy because of the delay at the time. And I found Chef's Warehouse, which I much preferred, that delivered to me in home, and I just thought it was more reliable, better food. But there are now hundreds of thousands of people on Instacart, and according to BuzzFeed, if you're using Instacart, your personal data is being sold online. Listen to this. Jane Litvinenko from BuzzFeed, publishing a story today, breaking news, that names, credit card data, addresses, and information on transactions as recent as yesterday are being sold online. That's unbelievable. The personal information of what could be hundreds of thousands of Instacart customers is being sold on the dark web. As of Wednesday, yesterday, sellers in two dark web stores were offering information on what appeared to be almost 300,000 accounts. And as of April, Instacart had, quote, millions of customers across the U.S. and Canada. The company is denying it. They're saying that there has not been a breach of its data. But apparently, they're wrong. The source of the information, which also included email addresses and shopping data, was unknown, but appeared to be uploaded from at least June until today, meaning yesterday. The cybersecurity firm Security Fanatics, the head of it, Nick Espinosa, said it's looking recent and totally legit. The accounts are being sold. Two women whose personal information was for sale confirmed they were Instacart customers and that their last order date and the amount matched what appeared on the dark web and that the credit card information belonged to them. So there it is. You know, I saw today that People's Bank, what did I get from People's Bank? I got another thing. What did I get? I got something this morning from Morgan Stanley that said that my information may have been compromised, but not necessarily personally. Don't you love it when they tell you, well, we've had a data breach. You may not have personally been affected, but you can go on Experian and get a free credit check if you want. No, it wasn't People's Bank. It was Morgan Stanley. Anyway, The bottom line is we hear about these things all the time, every single day. And the reality is that privacy is becoming an anachronism. 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.